From the KGOU studios, I'm Suzette Gralat, the Dean of the College of International Studies at the University of Oklahoma. Welcome to Worldviews. It's been a busy month for U.S. foreign policy, and Rebecca Cruz and I discuss how the U.S. has responded to multiple crises, from the shooting down of the Malaysian airliner in Ukraine to the situation in Gaza.
The leaders in Hamas are saying we are not even going to begin to look into a ceasefire unless we can include getting rid of this blockade. Our people are starving. They don't have jobs. No products are getting through. And Israel is saying, well, we're not going to give that up. And if we are, perhaps we need to get rid of these tunnels.
Then I'll talk with Venezuelan poet Arturo Gutierrez Plaza. His work explores the small scenes of everyday life.
When we were children, we discovered the war, we discovered the language. And I think the poetry is a way of maintaining that kind of experience.
The literature of Latin America, right after this hour's news from NPR. This is Worldviews. I'm Suzette Gralat. Rebecca Cruz, another interesting week in the international news. Of course, we're watching as Gaza, Israel, that escalation of the conflict continues. The hopes for a ceasefire basically are mostly dashed at this point in time. We saw last week that the Israeli army invaded on the ground, and the purpose was to destroy tunnels, this underground network. It's called Operation Protective Edge, trying to prevent the Palestinians from moving terrorists and weapons into southern Israel. But they've done this before. They've gone in on the ground before. There's a whole huge network underneath Gaza. Those tunnels have actually been there since 1982, at least the ones going into Egypt. But they were originally built to move consumer goods, food, gas, clothing, even livestock coming through those tunnels, tunnels that are about 100 feet underground. But it really escalated once that blockade of Gaza happened in 2007 after Hamas won the elections there. But they have new tunnels that are now being used to attack Israel. And so they're trying to destroy these, going in on the ground to destroy these tunnels. But are they really going to be able to do this, Rebecca? Is this something that's even fixable?
Well, it's really quite amazing, this infrastructure of tunnels that you mentioned. And there's actually three different types that we can talk about. There's economic tunnels, which you mentioned, between Egypt that were getting goods, even livestock in some cases. Those have recently been cut off by Egypt for the most part. You have the security tunnels, which have been mostly under the refugee areas, where officials know that they need to go if there's a problem. It's kind of to get security, and where they are thought to be holding weapons and other military armaments. And now these new infiltration tunnels that are going quite far into Israel. There has been situations where members of Hamas have come up through these tunnels, and that's obviously creating a huge concern for Israel. Can these tunnels be destroyed? Well, that's a big question, because, again, we're talking about three different networks of tunnels, and maybe we could get some of them, but to be able to get all of them, it seems nearly impossible. The other thing you mentioned that I think is really important here is this blockade, the Israeli-Egypt blockade, which started in about 2007 when Hamas really gained control there, and where you see a huge proliferation in these tunnels because goods were no longer able to come through the border there at Egypt. And so we have a lot of concern coming out of that. And that really has become the rallying cry for Hamas this week. We're talking about potential ceasefire. The groups or the leaders in Hamas are saying we are not even going to begin to look into a ceasefire unless we can include getting rid of this blockade. Our people are starving. They don't have jobs. No products are getting through. And Israel is saying, well, we're not going to give that up. And if we are, perhaps we need to get rid of these tunnels.
This is a real dilemma, though, for Israel, is it not? I mean, they declare a ceasefire, they leave early, and they leave some of these tunnels, therefore risking their security. At the same time, they stay and they search for these tunnels. They continue to try to destroy them. I mean, this isn't the first time they've done that, by the way. I mean, they destroyed thousands of homes in Palestine in the past trying to destroy the tunnels. But if they stay, they're creating more of a problem, more enemies. There's more international outcry. So, I mean, what are they to do? But at the same time, what are these Palestinians to do when, like you said, the blockade keeps them from getting these, the daily items of life and making a living? But they can also be used to bring in weapons and to move terrorists. So it's just a real dilemma on both sides. And here we have now a kidnapping of three young Jewish people, the kidnapping and murder, and then the retaliation murder of the Palestinian that has now erupted into this much larger, large-scale conflict than I think it ever intended to be. And now we're almost kind of stuck in the situation because neither side can figure out what needs to be done.
Well, and in the meantime, of course, it's the civilians that end up suffering in these sorts of situations as there are politics going around and Catch-22, as you mentioned, for sure.
Well, the U.S., of course, has had its difficulties in responding, the U.S. being one of the primary actors in trying to deal with Israeli-Palestinian conflict and hopes for peace. But, you know, Americans by and large continue to support Israeli incursions into Gaza. Polls conducted by Pew, by the New York Times and others say that majority of Americans are still supportive despite the international response and the outcry in other parts of the world, Europe and elsewhere, that are really pushing for Israel to back off. You know, so Secretary Kerry is very involved. He's talking to Prime Minister Netanyahu. He's talking to the Palestinian Authority President Mahmoud Abbas. He's talking to the UN. He's not talking, of course, to Hamas. He's not talking to the leadership there that's, of course, in exile, lives in exile in another part of the Middle East, in Qatar. But Kerry keeps stressing this sustainable way forward, trying to find some sort of solution. But we just, you know, seem, again, to be stuck. And then it was complicated this week by the FAA decision to stop all American flights into Israel, having an economic impact on the country and the backlash about that. So, again, we're just kind of in this pattern that we're still trying to find the way out, I suppose.
Well, and we're the United States is walking a very thin, perhaps difficult line here. Kerry has said that he wants to find a sustainable solution, but nothing is off the table, which leaves things very vague. Of course, in the United States, yes, polls do seem to indicate that the people in the United States are in favor of the actions of Israelis. But I think that does break down along generational lines. And we have heard a lot about kind of the war of information, the war of social media. And the Palestinians have certainly been winning this on an international scale and in the United States as well. And there were comments in the last week in the United States in particular that Israelis here need to do more on social media to try to gain more points, if you will, in that international kind of propaganda war. And certainly the economic consequences of having fewer flights coming into Ben Gurion, the major airport there in Israel, trade. Anytime there is a conflict zone, you're obviously going to have economic consequences. And certainly tourists are going to think twice about going to Israel, even more so than previously.
Well, as if the foreign policy crises this week aren't complicated enough, of course, we're still reeling over the Ukrainian crisis and what happened last week with the Malaysian airliner being shot down. But the U.S. having to handle a Ukrainian crisis and all of that outrage and President Putin and Russians and Russian separatists that are basically in, you know, entrenched in their positions, that too is kind of weakening the U.S. position in some way because they have really no way to respond to that either. Sanctions, you know, I mean, what are they going to do about that? So it's all coming together at one point in time and making American foreign policy this week particularly difficult and troubling.
It's been a very busy week for the Obama administration and certainly for Secretary Kerry, who this week was in Israel and over the weekend right after the flight was shot down in Ukraine was on all the major talk shows trying to show that the United States is in control, that they have influence and that they can carry their weight here. But it is very, very difficult. We are discussing putting additional sanctions on Russia, but we've talked before about how difficult that can be. Putin has continued to say that Russia is not responsible for this situation, and he has not taken any steps, notable steps at least, to try to quell this. In fact, we're seeing more machinery going into Ukraine. And so we are in a very difficult situation here. Europe in the same situation, and they're not able to do much either. So a lot of discussion about how this is going to move forward, but the United States is really going to have a difficult time on this one.
Without a doubt, we'll continue to pay attention and hopefully maybe next week it'll be a little bit slower. We'll see. Rebecca, thank you so much for being with us once again on Worldviews. If you have any questions or comments for Rebecca and me, leave them in the Worldview section of our website, kgou.org. We'd also love to hear from you on Twitter. You can follow this program at Worldviews KGOU or each of us individually at Cruz226 and at Suzette Gorlot. Next, I'm joined by Venezuelan poet Arturo Gutierrez Plaza. I'm Suzette Gorlot, and this is Worldviews. This is Worldviews. I'm Suzette Gorlot. My guest today is Venezuelan poet and author Arturo Gutierrez Plaza. He recently served as a distinguished visiting professor of Spanish at the University of Oklahoma. He regularly teaches language and literature at Universidad Simón Bolívar in Caracas. Gutierrez Plaza has published several books of literary scholarship and written several prize-winning collections of verse. He's received support from Mexico's National Fund for Culture and Arts and the Spanish Agency of International Cooperation for Development. Arturo Gutierrez Plaza, welcome to Worldviews.
Thank you for inviting me.
Well, you have been such a prolific writer over your career, and much of your literary work has been in the form of poetry. You've been described, in fact, and your poetry has been described, it seems that you're motivated to discover everyday life, that you want to describe small scenes in life. Can you tell us how poetry allows you to do this, discover the small scenes of everyday life?
Well, in fact, I think that poetry is in everyday life. And I try to put in words the first experience that we have as a child when we were children. We discover the world, we discover the language. And I think the poetry is a way of maintain that kind of experience. And then sometimes we forget that the everyday life is a mine of new experiences. And also, I think that the common language, the language of everyday life, is also kind of ground of exploration of new experiences every day. Sometimes we cannot see the wonderful of the life because we are seeing every day the same thing, but it's not the same thing. And also, the language is different in every way we can arrange words to construct a new link to reality, a new way to experience reality. You know? I think that poetry is mostly an answer to a question that we don't know before start writing. I mean, writing, we start to discover that question. The question that impulses the writing, but it's in the act of writing that we can discover that, not before that. And if you pay attention on reality, you can feel the same thing. You are discovering the mystery of reality in the everyday life in the same way that you can discover the mystery of the language and the reality in the same act of writing. Then I have tried to write a poetry that is constructed with everyday language, too, and about everyday life.
So you've brought some poems with you today. Can you give us an example of a poem that you've written about everyday life that, you know, it helps us understand and describe our lives in a, you know, these small scenes in many different cultures?
Yes, okay. Well, I can read one poem about my American experience. I lived in Cincinnati many years ago. And then I wrote a poem about the experience of laundry a Sunday morning. Then this poem is called 414 Ludlow Avenue.
In the laundry rooms in those dark basements of the old apartment complexes of the Midwest, there where the heavy air sweats in monotony, without the grace that adorns old things, lasting things, that's where the black cats hide unbeknownst to their owners. We, the tenants, give each other signs there. Without seeing each other, we leave behind anonymous reminders. There we discover our most intimate places. We take our clothes off. We abandon ourselves. We leave our clothes half-washed, halfway down the road, hung on some clothes hanger or forgotten unceremoniously on a table. That's how we live in this fine nut house. We pass by each other naked without ever taking notice.
Paseándonos desnudos sin darnos cuenta.
That is a really great poem. That definitely captures, I think, the essence of doing laundry, right? And the small scene of that in many different places around the world. Very, very great.
Thank you. Maybe in English is better.
My guest is Venezuelan poet and author Arturo Gutierrez Plaza. More of our conversation right after a break. I'm Suzette Gorlot, and this is Worldviews. This is Worldviews. I'm Suzette Gorlot, the Dean of the University of Oklahoma's College of International Studies. I'm speaking with Venezuelan author and award-winning poet Arturo Gutierrez Plaza. Right before the break, we talked about his poem 414 Ludlow Avenue that captured the everyday moment of doing laundry on a Sunday morning. Our thanks to former KGOU news director Kurt Gortney for providing the English translation. You can hear Arturo Gutierrez Plaza read that poem in the original Spanish on our website, kgou.org. Well, your larger work in terms of your scholarly work, beyond the poetry that you've done, I mean, you've written so much, has been described as a way to focus on the construction of cities. So let's get to your work in Venezuela as a Venezuelan, on the construction of cities in Venezuelan poetry through the transformation of rural areas into an international center of petroleum. This is very interesting. Can you tell us more about that focus and what we can learn by examining this transformation from those rural areas to international centers of petroleum? What do you mean by that?
Yes, the Venezuelan case is very interesting because at the first of the 20th century, Venezuela was mostly a rural country. More than 80% of population lived in rural areas in that times. At the end of 20th century, it was completely the opposite. More than 80% of population live today in urban areas. And that transformation was possible because of the petroleum. Venezuela was the most important exporter of oil in the world in the 50s and 60s. And it's still an oil country, petroleum country. Then the country changed rapidly, transformed from a rural country to an urban country. And also, I think the register of that transformation is in Venezuelan poetry. We can see in Venezuelan poetry how that transformation occurs. Also, I think it's important to understand that there is a kind of triangle, semantic triangle, between the poet, between the poetry, and between the society. And the relationship between these three points, the poet, the poetry, and the society, you can see along the history of the Venezuelan poetry how this relationship is changing too. The function of the poet in society, the function of the and the conceptions of the poem, of the poetry in the society, and the society itself. And in the same way, the language of the poetry is incorporating the urban imagination into the text, into the poem. And also the poet is part of the poem. The poem is a kind of mirror of the poet in a new society where the role of the poet is absolutely different. It's not in the center as in the end of the 19th century. Now the poet is in the margins. He's playing a different role in society. And you can see all these things in the poem itself.
Well, clearly, Venezuela has, I have to ask you, Venezuela has obviously been going through some difficult times lately. This transformation that you're referring to, that you can see in the poetry, continues to play a role in today's society. There's still a lot of transformation and shifting, what it seems, you know, from an outside observer, to be, you know, the Venezuelans are still experiencing a significant amount of transformation and transition. And so as they've been dealing with some of these troubling times, the violent protests, the political instability, what do you think is motivating this, and how do literary people and writers like yourself have a role to play? How is it affecting your work and your ability to engage in the creative process? I mean, how are you relating now to this society that seems to be struggling with where it's headed?
Well, in fact, this situation has been unique in the recent history of the country, and the cultural scene in Venezuela has been affected in the same way that the whole country. The whole country is split, it's divided in two parts. And in the cultural area, we are living the same situation. And it's really, you know, difficult because each part is segregated each other in many ways. But there are a kind of official culture and official literature that for writers and intellectuals and poets who are supporting this government are playing a different role than poets and writers and artists that are against this government. the dialogue has been broken too. For example, if you are against the government, if you are a writer, an intellectual, or an artist, and you are against the government, you don't have access to grants from the government. You don't have access to publishing houses from the government. You don't have access to, you know, exhibitions and that kind of things. And this is very, very particular of these times. It's the first time in the life of the country that we are living in this way. And it's interesting because so many writers and intellectuals and artists that were leftist artists in the past, now they are against this government. Sometimes we understand outside that Chavismo, the Chavist group, is left and the other group is right. And that is absolutely wrong. In Venezuela, it's not that easy, the process. It's more complex. I think most artists and writers were traditionally leftist people. The problem now is that what I mean is that the dialogue in the whole country, the whole cultural area in the country, is almost impossible. If a poet died in Venezuela and he's against the government, very likely that the minister of culture, he's not going to say anything about that. For example, I have this book. This is the major Venezuelan poet in the second part of the 20th century. He was published in the Oklahoma City publishing house. He passed away 5 years ago, and the government didn't make any mention about this. And that is very sad. But if you are a writer from the government party, the government is going to commemorate your works and your life.
Well, Arturo, I know this is a very challenging time in your home country, so we are paying attention to what happens there and wish you well. And thank you so much for sharing your work with us today and particularly your poetry. It's a great thing to have on our program. So thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
You've been listening to my conversation with Venezuelan poet and author Arturo Gutierrez Plaza. We have a transcript of this interview and both the English and Spanish versions of his poem, 414 Ludlow Avenue, online at kgou.org. The University of Oklahoma's College of International Studies produces Worldviews through a collaborative partnership with KGOU. Brian Hardzinski produces the show, and Symphony Swift handles the research and books our guests. For Rebecca Cruz, I'm Suzette Gorlott.